Meg could feel a rhythmical pulsing. It was a pulsing not only about her, but in her as well, as though the rhythm of her heart and lungs was no longer her own, but was being worked by some outside force. The closest she had come to the feeling before was when she had been practicing artificial respiration with the Girl Scouts, and the leader, an immensely powerful woman, had been working on Meg, intoning, "Out goes the bad air, in comes the good," while her heavy hands pressed, released. Meg gasped, trying to breathe at her own normal rate, but the inexorable beat within and without continued. For a moment she could neither move nor look around to see what was happening to the others. She simply had to stand there, trying to balance herself into the artificial rhythm of her heart and lungs. Her eyes seemed to swim in a sea of red. Then things began to clear, and she could breathe without gasping like a beached fish, and she could look about the great circular-domed building. It was completely empty except for the pulse, which seemed a tangible thing, and around dais exactly in the center. On the dais lay what? Meg could not tell. And yet she knew that it was from this that the rhythm came. She stepped forward tentatively. She felt that she was beyond fear now. Charles Wallace was no longer Charles Wallace. Her father had been found, but he had not made everything all right. Instead, everything was worse than ever, and her adored father was bearded and thin and white and not omnipotent after all. No matter what happened next, things could be no more terrible or frightening than they already were. Oh, couldn't they? As she continued to step slowly forward, at last she realized what the thing on the dais was. It was a brain. A disembodied brain. An oversized brain, just enough larger than normal to be completely revolting and terrifying. A living brain. A brain that pulsed and quivered, that seized and commanded. No wonder the brain was called it. It was the most horrible, the most repellent thing she had ever seen, far more nauseating than anything she had ever imagined with her conscious mind, or that had ever tormented her in her most terrible nightmares. But as she had felt she was beyond fear, so now she was beyond screaming. She looked at Charles Wallace, and he stood there, turned toward it, his jaw hanging slightly loose, and his vacant blue eyes slowly twirled. Oh, yes, things could always be worse. These twirling eyes within Charles Wallace's soft brown face made Meg icy cold inside and out. She looked away from Charles Wallace and at her father. Her father stood there with Mrs. Hoo's glasses still perched on his nose. Did he remember that he had them on? And he shouted to Calvin, "Don't give in!" "I won't! Help Meg!" Calvin yelled back. It was absolutely silent within the dome, and yet Meg realized that the only way to speak was to shout with all the power possible. For everywhere she looked, everywhere she turned, was the rhythm. And as it continued to control the systole and diastole of her heart, the intake and outlet of her breath, the red miasma began to creep before her eyes again, and she was afraid that she was going to lose consciousness, and if she did that, she would be completely in the power of it. Mrs. Watchett had said, "Meg, I give you your faults." What were her greatest faults? Anger, impatience, stubbornness? Yes, it was to her faults that she turned to save herself now.